This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to have Edward J. Larson with us, as well as invited guests here at the Commerce Club in Atlanta. We set them up for, so Dr. Dubois goes off looking for...
He wanted to find a missing link between primates, any form of primitive primates, prehistoric primates, and humans to try to put together the family tree. Now, it wasn't modern apes, of course, and it was earlier sort of primates. And he was actually more of a Lamarckian than a Darwinist, and he had this view that there were these bursts, that you'd make these steps, and everything would increase by doubling every skill or talent. And his idea was the human mind would double from an ape-like mind to the human mind. And so he was looking for one that was halfway in between. And since that's what he was looking for, that's what he found. He traipsed off to the Dutch Netherlands, which wasn't the most logical place.
East Indies.
Darwin always thought that humans evolved out of Africa, and you should look in Africa. But there were some people who thought, well, it could be, based on early Aryan mythology, it could come out of Asia and evolve from there. And he read a fellow named some German writers who adopted that, and some evolutionists. And so he went. It was easy for him to go there because the Dutch had the East Indies at that time. They ruled what's now Indonesia. And nobody would fund him. They said, you just don't go look for things like this. You're giving up a promising scientific career studying comparative anatomy. Why do it? But he signed up for the Dutch army as a physician, even though he hadn't really practiced medicine. They took him, and he wanted to sign up for the colonial army. He wanted to be stationed in Java. And when he got over there, all he did was look for fossil remains and got some local colonial administrators interested in the process, and they gave him some money. He hired quite a few local natives to dig around for him and try to bring him in everything. Took his whole family. They'd get malaria. His kids would, one of his children died over there. It was a very tough life, but he just was transfixed because he wanted to prove Darwinism. And he thought that would convince these wool-headed people back in his hometown in the southern Netherlands. That's who he really cared about. The scientists he knew all believed it, but he wanted to convince them. And the most amazing, and by this time, Ernst Haeckel, the German he had read, had named this mythical connection Pithecanthropus. I have to say it right. And and that's ape man. And he found it. He found what became known as Java man, the first proto-human remain ever found. It's now called Homo erectus, but he called it Pithecanthropus, just as Haeckel did. And later, other Homo erectus were discovered in China. It turns out that, and he thought it was the halfway in between, perfect step. Of course, that view of evolution is gone now. It's a branching tree with incremental steps. But in some ways, he was quite a bit like the Leakeys, who went to Africa, or Raymond Dart, who went to Africa, and Robert Broom, who discovered other of these remains. And they found earlier ones, and now the Pithecanthropus, the Homo erectus, is pretty far up the line. And there are lots of earlier finds. But this sort of driven search to prove evolution, and it was really tied. He wanted to prove it to the common people, and he thought the only way people would ever really believe, because by that time, scientists, 1880s, scientists all believed, biologists essentially all believed evolution, but it didn't sink into the people, especially for humans. And he thought the only way they'll ever believe it if they see those fossils.
And you say in the book Evolution that humans are the best studied of all of the species in terms of saying what is the Darwinian process.
Well, they're certainly as well studied now with all of the fossils that go all the way back through Africa. The evolution of the human body, with its various traits, the standing upright and the growing brain, is certainly as well documented. Now, there's certain, fruit fly evolution, things that evolve really fast and can actually be traced in the laboratory, or viruses are actually observed. But for ones that aren't observed, yes, humans are as fully worked in as any other species.
Which takes us to Bill's point about the other half of this being the development of the science of genetics and the whole blossoming of an additional part of the natural sciences that feeds into the ideas that become what you call the synthesis, the new synthesis, that Darwin, it's not your dad's old-fashioned Darwinism that lives today, that this genetics piece is really critical to how we think now in getting from the time of Wallace and Darwin to where science is now.
I want to set the stage. You're talking, this is a wonderful line. You talk about a proto-modern police state with quasi-medieval remnants of ecclesiastical privilege.
And what was that?
That's the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Out of which comes?
Mendel.
Genetics totally changed our view of evolution, and that was all in this century. Notice I was just talking
about... The 20th century.
The 20th century, right. It's no longer this century, the last century. I'm so old, I think of it as this century. Notice we were just talking about Eugene Dubois. He, as I said, was more a Lamarckian than he was a Darwinist. And that's telling. In the late 1800s, Darwin's idea, sure, made evolution believed by most scientists. Yeah, we evolved, but we didn't know how. And Darwin's own ideas was just one of many means. There were Lamarckian means, which is the old jus inheritans, that people will change by using their, giraffes stretch their neck and gradually their necks become longer. Then there's theistic evolution, that God is designing the varieties. Then there's orthogenesis. There are a whole variety, which is sort of like internal sort of drives that people have in the will. And there were a whole variety of different scientific theories of evolution that competed with one another. And it was only when genetics was discovered, thanks to the rediscovery of Mendel's work. Mendel worked in the late 1800s, but his ideas were sort of ignored for a while. And then in 1900, they were rediscovered by three different people who were working, debating these evolutionary ideas. And they had done research that suddenly made genetics make sense, Mendelian genetics. Because once you get an idea of how Mendelian genetics works, then you can figure out which of these evolutionary theories can actually begin to produce change.
Let me just put a footnote here. This is Mendel, the guy we all studied in second grade science, who grows many generations of peas. And I think we all as children were told, well, they're the red peas and the white peas, and it gets to a 3-to-1 ratio. And that's about all that us regular folks know about Mendel, other than he was a monk in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And there's a piece of this that I think is also very important, not only the genetics itself, and please, we do want to talk more about that, but this guy did the work and then was forgotten. Just forgotten for 30-something years. And you say no idea ever dies in science. That it's still there waiting for somebody to do something. So again, it's the pieces coming together a little differently, that people can see things a little different. And then how does this revolution that happens in the 1900s around the Mendel's explaining to us things that happen in the natural world, how does that then feed into the Darwinian perspective of natural selection, that species do change and how they change?
The working together of the general idea of evolution through natural selection plus genetics, and Darwin had absolutely no idea how genetics works. He'd say it often. He didn't know how it worked. And since he didn't know how it worked, it made it sort of up in the air of how evolution worked, because genetics is the key to the whole thing. And he didn't have a workable theory of genetics. What Mendel had been doing is Mendel was actually testing a different hypothesis, apparently. He was testing the idea that change comes through hybridization. That things, that all the different varieties, that God created certain things. It was Carl Linnaeus, who was a great scientist, his idea, that God created all these original kinds, and then they hybridized to make all the different forms we have. And Mendel was a good Catholic priest, a good creationist, and he thought, well, that may work. And so he did these enormous studies with pea plants in the monastery there in Austria, or what's now Czechoslovakia. And he would, and he found a remarkable ratio that how earlier things, hybrids aren't halfway in between and create new things. No, you.
And they're not blurred either.
And they're not blurred. That at least with peas, and peas turns out to be the best possible things to study, with peas, they break down and the old, the two different, if you hybridize two things, that by the second generation, you're going to get one quarter to be like the one and three quarters to be like the other, but that one third of that three quarters breeds true to the other type, and the in-between get again continues to break down into this ratio. That is, the changes survive, some recessive, some expressed. And therefore, if there's a mutation, if it it will survive in the population if it's a recessive mutation, even though we never see it. And therefore, if something else is beneficial, some other trait is beneficial, well, it will be, but it'll still live there. And then if environment changes, this recessive trait can suddenly blossom out because it's still there. And so you get these differences that Darwin never could understand because he believed that that genetics was sort of a blending and everything was halfway in between the two. And then there were lots of people who showed Darwinism can't work if it's a blending. No, they're consistent. And then when you then what they did is when Mendel never connected that with Darwinism, though he thought there might be a connection, he couldn't work it out. He ended up being promoted as any good abbot is. He's promoted to run as abbot. He becomes a very important religious leader in Austria, very wealthy, very influential. He's a success in his own right, but he had to leave his science behind. His science is when people are trying to figure out how evolution worked, they refound all of his work, all of his rich studies of how these ratios break down. And then they apply that math to changes that they actually observed, such as with the peppered moth in England, and they found that if these numbers work, mathematicians were the ones who linked the original scientific work of Darwin with Mendel. Mathematicians said, hey, this actually could work.
This is Edward J. Larson. We're all going to be back with him in a moment, and he'll tell us how it works in just a moment. Please be with us.